Hey everyone, Tawny here. I am so excited to share that my husband and I launched a non-alcoholic beverage called Parentheses. It's technically two drinks, a before and an after. The before uses herbs that stimulate the senses, and the after uses herbs that calm the senses. Head to drinkparentheses.com and follow us at drinkparentheses. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Recovery Rocks. It is Tawny, and I am joined by the one and only BFF, Ms. Lisa Smith.
It's Lisa. What's up? What's up?
How are you? How are you?
Hello.
How you be?
Good. Good. Yeah. How about you?
I'm good. You know, I'm good. Like we've talked about the last couple weeks, I'm like feeling recharged and like a human again. And I like feeling like a human, believe it or not.
Good. No, it's good. I'm so happy to see you being human. It's the best.
Pretending that I'm a machine has not been good for me, believe it or not. Who would have thought?
It's not good for anybody.
So we're going to talk about three kind of big things today, but they all connect. We're going to talk about codependency, setting boundaries, and energy vampires. Energy vampires is not
a
clinical
totally
term,
intersect.
But they very much intersect. We actually thought about doing three episodes, and then we talked about it and realized it actually all kind of works together. So we're just going to talk about all three. I have a lot of experience with codependency. Codependency work is a huge part of my recovery program. Since I got sober, I've learned that my codependency was actually one of the big reasons why I drank, why I self-medicated. And we'll get into all of that. I'll talk about how I learned how to set boundaries, how to identify my own codependent behavior. And also, you know, tying that into the energy vampire angle, identifying the people in my life that triggered my codependent behavior and really just took a lot of my energy away, and how I set boundaries with them.
So, do you want to define codependency?
Yes. So I want to define codependency quoting the person who wrote, Melody Beattie, who wrote the famous book called Codependent No More. So I figured
it's in the show notes too.
Yeah, this is such a phenomenal resource about codependency. And so the way that Melody defines codependency is the concept of losing oneself in the name of helping another. I think that is that's a beautiful, succinct definition. The concept of losing yourself while taking care of somebody else. And it's a really tricky conversation. With codependency, I think it's a tricky conversation because helping others is good, right? Like,
right.
We want, you know, we're told to give back. We're told to help others. We often feel better when we give back and we help others. So for me, I'll share a little bit of my personal experience. You know, growing up as an only child with no cousins, it was always me and a bunch of adults in a very emotionally unstable family. So it was, and this is not just my parents I'm talking about. I'm talking about like my extended family. I was the only kid, only grandkid, only niece. And there was just a lot of fighting going on. And I learned that when all of the attention was on me and I was like, you know, dancing or performing or telling a joke or just like playing with Barbies, whatever. People were not fighting. They were, everyone was like fixated on this kid, you know? So I realized that, you know, I internalized that. Again, this is after years of therapy and recovery of getting to the root, but that's just a small example of how I internalize that it is my responsibility to entertain, to keep the peace, to take care, to step in, to solve it. You know, I really carried the weight on my shoulder, the weight of the world on my shoulders until very recently. Lisa knows this. Until very, very recently, my codependency has been the driving force of all of my relationships, friendships, romantic relationships, work dynamics. I always felt like it was my responsibility to compromise myself in order to entertain or placate others.
Yeah.
And that, needless to say, I was misinformed. this was not a healthy coping mechanism at all. And that codependency led to a lot of anxiety and depression. And really, I was getting into really unhealthy friendships and romantic relationships because it was so imbalanced. It was just me compromising myself and my own integrity and my own values just to make someone else happy. So codependency work is, I think, like, it's something that I work every single day. Of all of the recovery programs I've worked, codependency is something that I have to actively manage every single day. And it's hard. It's really, really hard.
I mean, that is, it's almost like having it ingrained from, you know, a super young age, from really when you could be aware of it, the idea that what your mission was to, you know what I mean? Like your personal mission, as you saw it for yourself from a very young age, was to take care of others.
Yeah.
And it was not about you or what you might grow into or what you might need or what you might want at all. I could see how that is, like, your being is subsumed by the fact that, I'm here to, you know, keep these people entertained or to stop the fighting or to.
Yeah.
Nothing's about me. It's about, I'm here, like, they need me to do this. So there is no me apart from helping them mind what you viewed as helping them.
Literally, like, I only exist to keep the peace in these other relationships. And so a couple tangible examples of that is, like, you know, if two of my friends were fighting, I felt like it was my responsibility to either be the mediator, try to get them to resolve whatever their issue was. And a big part of where my anxiety still comes from, something huge for codependent people is anticipating other people's needs. And that is something, when I say I struggle with my codependency every day, that's probably the biggest one. Because I'm very aware of other people's needs, because I have spent 38 years thinking that it was my responsibility to fill those needs.
Right.
So, and again, that's anxiety. That is anxiety. Mm-hmm. That's projection. And that has also led to me being manipulative, because I've learned, like, if I talk to this person this way, then I can change. Then I can help them and I can solve this problem for them. So,
wow. Yeah.
It's like, you know, the subtitle of this book, Codependent No More, How to Stop Controlling Others and Start Caring for Yourself. That's what that piece, stop controlling others.
Right. Right.
That is, like, in a nutshell, that is, like, the essence of codependency is trying to manipulate, control, force other people to behave in different ways, because again, losing yourself in the process of trying to quote unquote help, even if you have the best of intentions, but my intentions were so warped, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, because you were pre-programmed. It's like what they say about, you know, your parents know how to push your buttons because they installed them, right?
That part. So I'm trying to, I wanted to read a couple just bullets from this book. Just like codependent, mm-hmm. like just a couple examples of codependency for listeners. See if anything sticks, you know? Because again, it's my responsibility to solve codependency for our listeners.
Yeah.
Let's see. So which part? Poor communication, obviously, but let's see. There's low self-worth, feeling terribly anxious about problems and people, mm-hmm. Obsessively checking on others.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that can be really tricky because if you are in a caretaking role, how do you find that balance?
You okay?
That's... Oh my God. No, Nick just popped in. He goes, hey, are you okay? I just want to obsessively check on you.
Oh my God. Keep it in. Keep it in.
That is so funny. So, and another thing, which is going to transition us into the boundaries portion. Here are a couple examples of like weak boundaries, allowing other people to hurt us. Wondering why we are hurting so badly, but not doing anything to change what we're doing, mm-hmm. you know, not changing others, not controlling others. What can we do for ourselves? And then also pretending to be okay with certain behaviors and other people, but you're actually not okay with them. You're just trying to placate them. That could show up with, you know, a big question I get in my line of work is like, I'm dating someone who drinks. How do I handle this? And, you know, my codependency work has taught me how to answer that question. It's, you cannot tell someone they have a drinking problem. You cannot make someone go to an AA meeting or make them listen to a sobriety podcast or whatever. All you can do is let them know how their drinking makes you feel. Yeah. And then you ultimately have to decide if you're okay right. with their drinking.
The question that you don't, that people fail to ask is like, not like, how do I feel about their drinking? Like their drinking is what it is. I'm not going to change that. How do I feel about that?
Yes.
Is it exactly. okay with me or is it not?
And that's the thing. And it's, you know, again, staying with someone because you think they need you is a form of codependency.
Completely. Yes.
So, you know, and it's, again, like I'm being super transparent here because if I heard someone speaking candidly about codependency years ago, I think it would have really, really helped me. So I'm sharing because I've done a significant amount of work on this and, that work has resulted in me really, really setting boundaries.
Yeah.
Really setting strong boundaries. And there's a couple pieces that I want to read from this New York Times article about energy vampires.
Yeah,
and boundaries.
We love this article. show notes. Yeah.
It's in the show notes. But before we go into any of that, I've been talking this whole time. Lisa, what are your thoughts on codependency?
Yeah, I mean, I never thought of myself as struggling with this until learning about it from you. You know, like I have, and I think about stuff, you know, like I always felt like I had to keep my mom happy, you know, for sure. Not to the same extent, I think, you know, you went through a much more difficult period as a kid and with what was, you know, what you grew up with and the extreme of that. But I see how, you know, it's to me, it's for me, it's a lesser, it's like a people pleasing thing which I think is
very
a step. I think which is a less toxic form of codependency, right? Like codependency for you, it was a survival technique, right?
Very much. And I'm so glad you brought the people pleasing angle in, because that's a huge, huge, huge part of it.
Right. Right. That it's not okay for me to ask for what I want or to do what I want because of the judgment. And part of that is like, look, when you're growing up, like you need to learn, you know, what's okay and what's not. And, you know, you test boundaries and all that, but that's, I carry a lot of people pleasing. And it is for me, when I've learned about your experiences with codependency, it's like, oh my God, that is, you know, much more deep-seated and difficult situation, because I was able to pretty, you know, once I got sober and my sponsor was like, what other people think of you is none of your business, it made it a lot easier for me. But I didn't, because I didn't have those years ingrained and from such a young age as you had. And it is a big deal. And I think a lot of people, I'm so glad you raised this topic, because I think a lot of people out there don't understand that this is, you know, the magnitude of this and what it can really lead to.
Very much. Very much so. And, you know, and I think that my own codependency recovery is why I'm so obsessed with the role that alcohol plays in our interpersonal relationships.
Yes.
Because that it's not, for me, it wasn't just the alcohol. Of course, it's never just the alcohol. It was my codependency and people pleasing and anxiety and depression that I was self-medicating with alcohol. That was like this filter that was like, it was like this really,
yes.
this really toxic fly strip, you know,
right, of like, right. Yeah.
You know, it's like I was attracting all these people that needed help, and I was going to be this like superhero who could fix them,
right.
You know?
Right.
And I am happy to say that I am no longer trying to change people, because I know that that is a form of control and manipulation, and it's unhealthy.
Yeah.
So an example of some healthy boundaries that I've set, you know, if someone comes to me with a problem, I ask them, now I say, do you want me to just listen, or would you like some advice? Like how can I show up for you today?
Oh my God. Can I just say, I love that, because I'm right now, and I've talked about it a little bit, we haven't talked about that much. I'm back in my writing workshop for several months now, and I'm writing this novel for fun. I don't have any expectation it would ever get published. I've never written fiction. It's really like something I just enjoy doing, and I love being in writing workshop. And I sent you some stuff to read, and the first thing you sent back was like, okay, how do you want me? I'm not a fiction editor. Do you want me to do a fiction edit? Like, so how do you, what kind of feedback are you looking? I was dying. I was laughing. I'm like, no, just read it. And I don't care. Like, tell me if it's too goofy.
It's, and you know, I've learned so much just by putting that little, by asking that question.
By asking that question.
Because people always appreciate it. They're like, actually, thank you for asking that. Like, I think I just want to vent. Because my instinct is still, you know, you call me with a problem, and in my mind, I'm writing out a 10-step plan for you.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And not everybody wants that. And again, who am I to formulate a plan for you? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
So that has been significant for me. And it's less draining because I'm not in problem solving mode. I'm actually able to be present and listen to you when you call me.
Right.
And you know, like I'm able to be a good friend. I'm able to be a good partner.
Right. You're not constantly processing everything someone says to you in the form of figuring out a solution.
Exactly. And, you know, Nick still has to tell me that sometimes. If he'll present a problem and I'll sometimes still be like, well, have you tried this? Have you tried this? And he's like, I'm not looking for solutions. I'm just letting you know that this is a problem that I'm struggling.
Yeah.
So, you know, that I think that that's a big one. But I wanted to read a couple bullet points from this New York Times article about energy vampires. And these, you know, again, this is not a clinical term. Energy vampires is it's exactly what it sounds like. These people who usually don't know that they're an energy vampire, but they just being around them drains you. And I feel like I'm always talking about What We Do in the Shadows, but it's a show. It's a really funny show about vampires. And one of the vampires is an energy vampire. And it is so funny to see, like, it's this, like, this guy, he works in HR and he's just talking, like, speaking in these, like, really boring platitudes of, like, hump day, right? Or got another case of the Mondays. And then you see he's physically draining people of energy. It's so funny.
I have to watch it. Or bringing chaos, or people who bring chaos.
Exactly. So that's a funny one. But so in this New York Times article, they interview one of my favorite authors, therapists, Nedra Glover Tawab. She's written several books and workbooks. She's a therapist who's written books on boundary setting and creating healthier family dynamics. So these are, this is a list that she provided to the New York Times to ask yourself about if people in your life are energy vampires who are possibly triggering codependent behavior in you, possibly draining you, anything like that. So she calls this conducting a friendship audit. And I love that reframe. So this could be a relationship audit, a family audit, whatever. So number one, she says, make a list of your closest friends. Again, it could be family, coworkers, whatever. Then use the following prompts to take notes about the energy that your friends supply. Number one, who do you look forward to spending time with? Number two, who makes you feel uplifted and understood? Who, if anyone, do you consistently put off seeing or dread responding to?
Ouch.
Who often makes you feel so irritated or fatigued that you have to recover after seeing them? Who makes you regularly zone out during conversations because they don't involve you? And it says, if the last three questions bring up a specific friend, that person might be an energy vampire. So the reason we're combining energy vampires into this conversation is because I had a lot of people like that in my life that did trigger my codependent behaviors, where, you know, this one question, who makes you feel exhausted after spending time with them that you need to recover? I had a lot of friends like that, and I was very, very aware that I felt exhausted being around them because I was trying to solve their problems, and they were coming to me, treating me almost like a therapist, and I was solving their trying to solve their problems. It was a very unhealthy dynamic for both of us. So I know these can bring up some really, uncomfortable feelings. These questions can bring up a lot of uncomfortable feelings and conversations.
And I think with a lot of, you might tick off people, like, it makes me think of people just going through these things. And, you know, that doesn't mean you want to, I mean, you want to set boundaries, as we talked about boundaries. But it doesn't mean you need to, like, eject people from your life or have to, you know, have a big conversation and uncomfortable with them when you're, you know, but if there is relief in just being able to look at that, to go through that list and go, oh yeah, you know what? That person is an energy vampire. And mm-hmm. I'm just going to know that in context going forward, right? Like, I can deal with you once I know what you are and how, you know, yes. it doesn't mean, you know, a lot of times you can't cast someone like that out, or maybe you don't want to, you know, but you just need to figure out what are the boundaries I can set and what is the context in which I can be in this friendship or in this family relationship, whatever it is.
Exactly. And that is what Nedra says to do about setting those boundaries is sometimes you cannot cut these people out of your lives. Sometimes you may not want to. This, right. And, you know, again, setting boundaries is actually a really kind and loving thing to do, because it's saying, I want you in my life, but in order for us to have a healthy relationship, this is what I need.
Yeah.
And it opens up a dialogue. And, you know, it's a boundary doesn't mean like, these are the rules. Like, if you want to be my friend, you have to act like this. That's not a boundary. That's another form of manipulation.
Yeah.
But a boundary. So like that's, you know, something that I learned recently is learning the difference between a boundary and a request. So, you know, a request, think of it as like a question mark of like, you know, like asking someone to do something. Like, you know, when you do this, it makes me feel this.
Right.
So, you know, just I would appreciate if that doesn't happen, or if that happens less. That's a request.
Yeah.
You know, whereas a boundary is, you know, saying, yeah, I'm available, but I only have 10 minutes. You know, that's saying like, yeah, I'm around, I'm available. I only have 10 minutes to talk. I don't have.
Yeah.
So like, that's the difference. But so think of like the request as like a question mark, whereas a boundary is more of like a period. Sometimes it's an exclamation point. Let's be real.
Yeah.
But
the definition of boundary that you like, right, that we've talked about mm-hmm. is, what is that again?
Yes. I don't remember who said it. I'll paraphrase. It's something like setting boundaries allows me to love you and me at the same time.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
So like that reframe really helped me see boundaries in a more, it was like, oh, that's actually really kind. You know, that's a really, like, I love you so much and I want you in my life. Let's work on this.
Right.
That is a healthy relationship right there. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think like, let's end it on this, you know, before we talk music, but we get a wonderful quote from the iconic Oprah Winfrey. Maybe uh-huh. you've heard of her.
Uh-huh.
Oprah and Gail, they say, you're with the wrong friend if you are around anybody that makes you feel less than 100% yourself. If you're around anybody that makes you feel like you can't shine or say what you need to say. So I think
so true.
That's that if you know, maybe putting that through this filter of like, do I have to dim my light around certain people? Do I have to change my behavior around certain people? You know, mm-hmm. these might not be healthy relationships. You might have to set boundaries. And if you are staying in those unhealthy relationships, is there any sort of codependency rooted in that?
I love that. Yeah. What do you think about music for this?
You know, I had a song that I forgot it.
Oh, okay. Well, I can tell you what it made me think of.
Go ahead.
So when we were talking about energy vampires and all of that, I was thinking of Stone Temple Pilots' song, Big Empty.
Mm, okay, yes.
You know, I mean, that is like a real energy vampire situation in that song, right? and I love Scott Whelan, the late Scott Whelan. And then when you were just talking about like the Gail and Oprah and the star, I thought it made me think of Madonna's Lucky Star, going way back to when I was like 18 years old and had like the rubber black bracelets all the way up my arm and the crazy splash printed overalls to be like Madonna with the bandana in my hair.
What about lace? Did you wear lace?
I had lace gloves.
Yes.
We all had lace gloves. Yeah.
Love. I'm thinking of, you know, our favorite song, Hey Jealousy, by the Gin Blossoms, because that line you and I love, if you don't expect too much from me, you might not be let down.
The best ever.
I think of that lyric at least once a day, but I think it pertains to this conversation in, you know, a lot of my codependency comes from having these ridiculously high expectations for other people and for myself.
Yeah.
So I kept getting let down, especially if I couldn't quote unquote solve their problem. I would expect myself to be able to, to solve this thing. And if I couldn't, then there was something wrong with me. And it's this, you know, so, you know, maybe, you know, flipping those lyrics to being kinder to myself. If I don't expect too much from myself, maybe I won't be let down.
Yeah. And that always brings me back to that sign that like I found life changing when I was walked into Cocaine Anonymous the first time. And it was just a sign, one of those slogan signs on the wall that said, high expectations, low serenity.
Yes.
That's it.
That's, you know, my therapist has a good line that I also think about a lot. He says, if it's urgent, it's not spiritual.
Ooh.
And I, you know, it's not a blanket thing that applies to everything, but it's definitely a filter of like, why am I rushing?
Right.
You know, is this like, why am I so urgent about this thing? You know, so it's just, it makes me think. And I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome.
So if anything that we shared today, resonates, you're clearly not alone. We'll have links to, this incredible best-selling book, Codependent No More.
And I put in the New York Times piece. Yes. And also, if you want support in this, we put in a link to Codependence Anonymous, which is a 12-step support group for codependency that really saves people's lives.
Definitely. Yeah. We didn't even talk about that, about how, you know, I did not go to AA, but Al-Anon has been a huge part of helping me with my codependency, because Al-Anon is a 12-step support group for people who love fellow addicts and alcoholics, or anyone who has self-destructive behavior. So going to those meetings helped me understand that it is not my responsibility to fix anyone else. It is only my responsibility to take care of myself.
Yeah.
So, and again, Codependency Anonymous, in Al-Anon, free peer support groups. You could go try online.
You can turn your camera off.
Your camera off and just listen to it like a podcast, you know, go for a walk and just listen, and you'll hear some stories that are like your own, I promise. And you're definitely not alone. And even just talking about codependency like this has felt really cathartic.
It always feels better when we articulate stuff, when we put it out there. It's so true.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. So you're not alone. And thank you so much for listening this week. And take care of yourselves.
Take care.
Thanks for listening. We hope you like what you heard. If so, please hit subscribe and consider rating and reviewing us so others can find us. Tawny, how can our listeners find you?
You can find me at Tawny M. Lara on all of the social medias. You can find my blog, sobrietyparty.com. Lisa, how can we find you and your amazing book?
My book is Girl Walks Out of a Bar, and it is available at bookstores everywhere and online. And you can find me at lisasmithadvisory.com. And I'm on social media at Girl Walks Out. Thanks for listening.